Welcome to the Productivity Show by Asian Efficiency, helping you do more and be better. And now here's your host, Zachary Sexton.
You know what? This is what we should talk about. We're both kind of in it, and I almost think you're in the weeds more than I am, but I'm feeling it. But having multiple roles and responsibilities and juggling all of
sure.
those. Because you are the product owner of the podcast. You are the product owner of the, which we're, I guess we're kind of merging now, of the...
Blog Council.
What's the group
yeah.
called?
Well,
the
yeah,
content?
Now it's the,
yeah, the Blog
the content
Council.
Or Communications Council, right.
So we merge those two. You also have epic articles coming out. You're also responsible for the content when it comes to the dojo. You're also responsible for getting into the dojo. How do you feel about all? And I'm probably missing some. I think you're a dad. Heard you had
yeah,
some
I've
boys.
Got a few kids at home.
You're a husband. You're a man of the faith. So you got responsibilities and roles there. I'm sure there's some things you contribute to in your local economy. Not economy, but you're I'm just economics major. I just
yeah,
always say that.
I know
word
what you're
too
saying.
Much. Yep. Your local community. It sounds like you're pretty involved there. So what are you
well,
doing?
Honestly, that's kind of what spurred the combining of the Blog Council and the Podcast Council is I am now a product owner of these two separate things, and I've never been a product owner before. I don't know exactly what that means, other than it was explained to me when we were down in Austin a few weeks ago. And it seemed...
Yeah, you were listening to that book on
yep.
Scrum.
Yeah,
I'm
listening to that that book, and I can't remember the exact name of it. But
did that have a good definition?
Yeah, I mean, basically, I understood what the product owner did, but it's kind of a different understanding. You know how like you can read a book and you can understand the concept, and then all of a sudden you get in the middle of it and you're like, oh, it's not actually what I thought it was. It's more than that sort of a thing. Difference, mm-hmm. I guess, between information and revelation would be another way to say it, where it's like, ah, yeah, I get
yeah.
it now. So I was quasi freaking out last week when I knew we had two council meetings coming up and I'm like, okay, so what exactly am I supposed to do with these? And as I dug into them and, you know, just started preparing the notes for the meetings, I kind of realized that we should be saying the same thing in all of our channels. We should really bring this under one umbrella, and it just seemed to make sense. And I was actually really happy with the way that the meeting went today. I know we introduced some stuff that'll take a little bit of time to implement, but I really think it's going to be good making sure that all of our messaging is the same and knowing also what curveballs, so to speak, are coming, you know, when we're launching a new product or an event or whatever, like knowing that that stuff needs to happen on certain days and that that's going to alter the schedule. Like that is, it helps me a lot the way that I think about things and process things because I'm a planner. I want to know analytically, you know, I want to dot all the I's, cross all the T's, know exactly what's going to happen when. And I also think it's good just, even if you don't work that way, to kind of see things big picture and how everything kind of fits together. And I'm really excited about, you know, where things are going to be going with that. What was your opinion? What did you think about the meeting today? And be honest.
Oh, I thought it was one of the... No, I thought it was one of the better ones we have. I think the thing I appreciated it was the big picture. What I found interesting is, and I think this is sort of on the other meeting that we had last night, was that you and Aaron are more concerned with the plan and making sure things happen on a good schedule, that things show up on time, that things are accurate. And Tan and I are a little bit more willy-nilly. We're like, yeah, you know, we'll do it when we're pushed against the wall. We'll get it to you, and that was kind of an interesting conversation. And I got sold on doing this because it seemed like it actually does make some sense to do that. Before, with our blog, is we would have things, you know, we'd write the article, and now we want to do it 14 days in advance, which is quite yeah. a jump. I was kind of like, did a spit take in my coffee. Like, what, 14 days? We went from like 2 days to 14 days. Like, what about 7? What about 10? I was kind of bargaining. it was the first step in accepting you have a problem, bargaining, negotiating, complaint, the 7 steps. I don't know. I haven't read that one. I haven't had any drug and alcohol problems. But yeah, I guess that's what we're going to do when it comes to being a little bit more proactive, because that's what we need to do in order to not just have some random blog post or random podcast or something else kind of gumming up the works, or something that somebody else is expecting. So one of the things that working in a team that is pretty important is that you have dependent mm-hmm. variables, and one of them being, we need somebody to edit all the blog posts before they come out, and so that needs time to happen, and our editor is not full time with us. Yep. So we need to have that bandwidth to do it. And I think having Marmel remind all of us, and if people are listening to this, we don't know, we're recording it. Marmel is our Scrum Master. And so there's 3 roles in Scrum, which is a type of development. And actually, since you just listened to the book, I'll look for my notes on sure. on it. But the roles. Yep. Can you explain
them? Yeah,
them?
So basically with Scrum, there is a product owner who basically decides what stories are going to be worked on. Stories are basically the tasks that you want to get done for the next sprint, which is basically just the time block that you want. That you have to work with. So it could be a week, it could be 2 weeks. In this case, for the content council, it's a month. So what are we going to do over the next month? And then the product owner selects, these are the things that we should work on, but then the team is the one who says, yeah, we're going to do that, or no, we're not going to do that because we can't, this reason, that reason, whatever. So...
Oh, so when I was fighting back, I was fulfilling my role as a team member.
You were playing your role perfectly.
Didn't even know it.
And I didn't really take it as like you were really fighting the process. Like, I know it was a pretty big change, and I think I can't speak for Aaron, but I know for me it wasn't like we need to do this and then we need to make sure that we follow it to the T. It was more like we should put something in place to shoot for, because right now it's just kind of like, oh, whatever happens. And even if we miss, our 14-day deadline, we're still going to be much better off than we have been. And like I said in the meeting, like, I've been guilty of this too. That's kind of what brought it to light, was like, I missed some of these deadlines. And it was like, well, why did I miss these deadlines? Because I didn't understand all the dependencies that needed to happen in the process. And so that's what I was trying to highlight today, was like, this process here, we need to all be on the same page with how long this actually is going to take, given limited resources. Like you said, our editor only has so much time to devote to this. So kind of circling back to the Scrum definition, the product owner is the person who selects, these are the things that are important for this product to be moved forward. This is what we should shoot for. The team says, yeah, we're going to work on this. No, we're not going to work on that. And then they also adjust time estimates. If you're really going to dive into the Scrum way of doing things, you'll say this task, the product owner may say, this task will take 4 hours. And then it gets assigned to you during the meeting. You bring it up and you say, well, actually, that task is bigger than you realize because we got to do this, this, and this. It's probably more like 8 hours. And then you select.
Which we typically do, but I think with content, we just... It's been the same. It's the same thing over and over and over again. And some are longer than others. Obviously, some epic post with tons of videos in it takes a little longer than a 800-word little article. But we don't assign it there. But typically, we assign it most places.
Yeah, exactly. So we kind of streamline that process a little bit, because we kind of know what exactly needs to be done for the articles. And then the other role that you said, the Scrum Master, which is Marmel, her role is basically to look at the issues as the sprint is going. So in the 4-week window, like, if somebody is not moving forward one of the articles that they said they were going to write, then she would jump in and message them, say, hey, this is due in a week, 2 weeks, whatever. Where's this at? Update this issue when you get a chance. So she basically would make sure that nothing falls through the cracks and make sure that the team operates efficiently. That's probably a really bad definition if you've read that book, but it's a general overview.
Well, and to get a sense too, she knows this because every article that we have, every podcast, every project, every email, everything we do is we basically create a little card for, which we use Jira. But if you think of Trello or even go back old school and think of maybe a note card that you'd write, okay, this is what we want to do. This is our definition of done, which is the acceptance criteria. We move that over. So I think we're changing. We agreed this morning we're going to change the writing schedule. So right now the Kanban board I'm looking at has a number of lists on it. So it's idea, waiting for writer, selected for development, writing, upload, proofreading, waiting for publication, done. We're streamlining that a little, aren't we?
Yeah. Basically, it's research and write is the like when it's in development, and then upload, and then proofread, and then publish or done, I guess.
Yeah.
So there's basically four different steps. I mean, you could really break it down if you wanted to into like select images, write SEO description, but it's not really necessary. That kind of stuff, because it's the same person who would be doing those sorts of things, and it's still part of the same process, like it's going to be done at roughly the same time, those things would just tend to make the system more complicated, more convoluted. And if you are constantly like going back to update something instead of just finishing the task that you're working on, that can cause the friction that would cause you not to use the system. So I think it's better that we have just, you know, the points where it switches hands, so to speak.
Yeah. So also with the podcast, we went from 7 steps to 4. So backlog, prepping, recording, editing, publishing, review, done. Since we're using Freedom Podcast to edit our podcast now, it's just record episode, pass it off to Freedom Podcast, edit episode, pass it off to Tina, create email. Oh my gosh, I need to give some Tina some bonusly points because I'm just remembering how much I hated doing that. And then to be reviewed, so Tina can pass it off to you, me, Tan, somebody else on the team.
Yep.
And that's just, that's I think it's helpful. I was pretty bad about updating the podcast cards prior, but I think I'll be a little bit better now. I would usually do it based on comments, and I didn't really change where it was on the board all that effectively, I think.
Yeah, well, I didn't either. I mean, back when I was editing the podcast and we first introduced that new Kanban board, there were actually I think like 11 or 12 different steps, and it went from like editing the episode to attaching the artwork to editing the meta description. You know, and that was typically all stuff that I would do in the same day if I was working on the podcast. So it's like, why am I updating this issue 5 times? I'm not going to do that anymore. I'm just going to update it at the end of the day. But then the fact that I didn't update it every time, that sometimes caused me to forget to update it. So, I think if you just have to, you know, touch it once sort of a thing, that will really help streamline that process.
I think I remembered fighting you guys on the Kanban board too. So we had this little check mark system that I thought worked pretty well.
Yeah, with the acceptance criteria.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yeah, I agree. And we still are doing that too.
Well, maybe we don't need to actually check the acceptance criteria now. We could just move it along.
Yeah.
With that.
Yeah, that could work. I mean, ultimately,
I don't know. There's something satisfying about those green check marks, though. I like making them.
I agree. I love the green check marks. If you were to pick one, I would say the Jira workflow stage is probably the better one, just because then you can look at the board, which is really cool in Jira because you can see at a glance what stage all the stuff is in, and you can identify. You know, there's 3 issues that need to be reviewed, and Mike's out of town this weekend, so. I guess I need to jump in and review some of those. You know, it kind of goes along with the whole idea of the self-organizing team with Scrum. Like, you can identify stuff that can be worked on, and you can offer assistance and stuff, and that's where Bonusly comes in too. Like, that was a really cool idea. So props for that. I should give you Bonusly points for coming up with Bonusly.
I've probably gotten more bonusly points for coming up with the bonusly than anything else. It was actually a coaching client that introduced me to it. It's pretty cool. What up, Vaughn? if he's listening. We can talk about, too. I actually just clicked on an issue, and it's pod 256. So every single issue is separate. So that way we can just have a unique URL to it. So if, let's say, I wanted to know where something was, I could just say pod 256. I've got a bad memory for numbers. I imagine if I had a good memory for numbers, I would love this system even more. But I see the benefit of it. So I'm always looking up issues, which is a little bit of a hindrance to my workflow. But here's the story. So the story is basically why we're doing something. So it's a book list, and people they'll know after this point that we have created a book list for people if they want to know the books that people have done. And it looks like Donna hasn't done anything on it. I probably need to get her moving on it. So I was asking her if she could help me go back to all the 60 old episodes that have been published and copy the book, so I could look at all the books, see what the recurring pattern was, as well as make sure the kind of the best ones got put on that list. So the story is, as the Productivity Show listener, you could either do it from the business's perspective or the customer's perspective. So in this case, listener, I want to have a list of the most popular books so that I can know what to read to be more productive. Mm-hmm. Pretty simple. Just it's the who, the what, and the why. You know, just what you're doing and what the benefit is, basically, and who it's benefiting. And the acceptance criteria is to go through podcasts and write a list of all the book recommendations, create a PDF of the most popular/influential books, create a lead page that has books and the Productivity Show imagery on it. So I thought that, you know, just make something that looks nice so you guys can click on, listeners can go click on the page. It looks good, and you can get your book list sent right to you. And redirect to the Productivity Show. Oh, add a redirect to theproductivityshow.com/books. Everything at the Productivity Show redirects to asianefficiency.com. So if you hadn't noticed, that's what happens. And because we just don't want to maintain a million websites, add link to show notes page. So that's it. You know, anybody could pretty much do this if they had the technical know-how. And if there was more needed, I would have added it there.
Yep.
But I actually did. So with Donna, I got more specific. I was like, can you go back to the live shows? Gave her a link. Pull the book from each one, write a list in the comments of the issue, and then pass the issue back off to me. So yep. I'm probably just going to copy this, and I'm going to ping Donna right now.
Yeah, so right now, for example, the workflow stage for this is backlog. And in Jira, what that means is that it hasn't been started yet. So you posted this comment a couple days ago, and you can see right away that because it's still in the backlog, that Donna maybe hasn't even seen this yet. So like you said, yeah, I'm probably going to ping her and just make sure that, you know, she is actually working on this. That's the kind of information you can get at a glance by using our workflow, which is pretty super cool.
That would have been nicer to say, have you seen this, than can you get started on this for me? I kind of feel bad now for saying that. That's already sent.
No. I think with our team, like, and that's where the video monthly calls are really good. Like, we all know each other well enough to kind of read through the lines with that type of stuff. But I know I've struggled with that in the past, especially before I met any of you guys. Like, I think I was probably writing for Asian Efficiency for, I don't know, several months before I actually physically met you and Tan down in Austin for that meetup we had.
Oh yeah, which and, wasn't even very long, but it
no, it, was... it wasn't. I was literally there for an afternoon, but it was cool. I mean, it's cool every time we get together and I get to see you guys. But at that point, basically, like, I had never met you guys before, so even though we had spoken on Skype, I'd heard your voice, whatever. It just added so much more context. I felt like I knew you guys so much better. And it really changed the way, from my perspective anyways, that we communicate online using a tool like this. Once you actually like see the other person. I don't know. Do you agree, disagree?
Oh, I totally agree. Yeah. I definitely need that human touch. I think that's something with text, though, it is limiting. You can't always get the tone. So, for example, that message I just hip-chatted Donna, can you get started on this for me? Could be like, could you get started on this for me? It's been in the backlog for 2 days, woman. True. Or it's like, hey, Donna, can you get started on this for me? Like, that's how I would like to ask it. You know, and smiley faces and things like that help.
But, no, I agree with that, and especially like, there's stuff that I say all the time to my wife that I wish I would have said differently. So like the fact that you do have face-to-face communication doesn't like negate anything. It's not like, oh, well, I know Zach, so I'm just automatically going to give him the benefit of the doubt when he types a message in HipChat that can be interpreted a little bit, you know, more direct than you had intended it. But just the fact that there is that type of communication now with those monthly video calls, like I think there's a much better chance that Donna reads that and says, you know, Zach's not really ticked at me because I haven't started this yet, but I am going to, you know, look at it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah. There's also a little side thing that we're doing. I don't know. You weren't part of this beta, but it's rolling out right now. If you actually look at your notifications in Confluence, we're all doing coaching calls every quarter with each other.
I did see that. Yeah, that's a really cool idea.
Who's your coach? Let me go check this.
I think it's Tan.
Aaron's going to be my coach. But I did one with Donna, and we had a kind of a list of questions, and it was very much outside of the realm of work, and it was, you know, like how it was involved with work, like, hey, how is it going, you know, at Asian Efficiency, but other questions were like, what about your family life? What about yada, yada? Mm-hmm. And definitely got to know her much more as a person. It was like an hour conversation where we talked about World War Z and her grandma and her kids. And
I agree that all that little stuff actually trickles over into the way that you work together as a team. And I think it's really, really good. Like even just when I was down in Austin, even though we were pretty busy, like the fact that I was able to stay at your place and we were able to hang out at least a little bit. You know, we got to watch that that video. What was it, the lady in number six?
Yeah, the lady in room number six, the door number six. That was a really beautiful movie.
Yeah, exactly. And it's just basically like sharing those experiences with other people, especially people that you work with. It helps you realize, I think, that it gets your focus off of you because it helps you realize that they are actually people and they have feelings and interests and all these other things. And you're maybe a little bit more careful about how you say things. But I know part of that probably is my personality because I'm so analytical and like, these are the numbers and this is what needs to be fixed. You know, so my tendency is to be more direct. But that personal interaction, like that really helps me recenter myself, I guess, would be a good way to say it.
Yeah. I feel like you communicate with a degree of, you pull the punches a little bit, you know, if something needs to happen, you're like, hey, this kind of, it might be more of an American thing too, like not to be over, well, I don't know. Sometimes we're direct. I'm not sure. I guess it's just a personality thing. And then the movie we were just talking about is The Lady in Number Six. So check that out. You can rent it for $5 on Vimeo. I wish I'd bought it because I wanted to go and actually check it out again, but I didn't do it within the 48, 72 hours they gave. But I can always rent it again.
If you're interested in it, basically what it is it's a documentary of this, is it Hungarian lady? No.
Definitely a Holocaust survivor from, it seems like Poland, but I don't know. Somewhere on the Eastern Bloc.
Yeah, and she's just got a crazy story about how her experience in the concentration camps because she was an accomplished pianist, which was a little bit different because they used it for Nazi propaganda, is pretty crazy. I love those types of stories.
She's 110 now. She was 109 when they were filming that. Oh, wait a minute. Now she is no longer with us. There's another comment. But that's a pretty good run. 110 years. Yeah, nicely done.
And she talked about in the, not to spoil the whole thing, but it just, you can tell right from the beginning that she's got a very different outlook on life and how she finds joy in all these little things, even though she's experienced some terrible things. Like, that was the biggest thing for me, was like, how can you have that positive mindset given all the things that have happened to you? Like, I'd like to say, yeah, I could do that too, but I don't think you can ever confidently say, yeah, I'm going to experience those specific things and I'm going to, you know, I'm going to come out on top without actually doing it.
I know you haven't read this yet because we've talked about it, but Viktor Frankl's A Man's Search for Meaning really gets into the psychology of that and basically just, you know, focusing on what you can control. He really got deeply into the psychology of the people who survived versus the people who died during the Holocaust. And people, it was crazy. They would just, it wasn't because they were necessarily malnourished, although they were, and it wasn't because they of lack of sleep or lack of sanitary conditions, which were probably all reasons. They would just give up hope and they would die. And I mean, as much as I would like to think that I could tough something out like that, I don't know if I would find meaning in something when my environment was just so tragic. Where the idea I kind of have put more thought into is a little bit less heavy. Over the summer, Nikita and I were reading World War Z to each other around the campfire when we're on our road trip. And we talked about it, and I was like, I'd be one of the early dead, Walking Dead, because you just kind of give up hope. We also like the show Walking Dead too, and it's like, I wouldn't want to live in a world like that. That seems awful. I'll just die now. But you know, if you find another meaning to attach to, and that's something that is possible to persevere.
Yeah, absolutely, and that actually kind of leads into a whole nother topic, and we don't have to go there if you don't want to, but like finding your why, like that is probably, in my opinion, one of the most important things you can do. I know, like, looking at the dojo posts people have been posting lately, a lot of them are struggling with willpower and procrastination and eating my frog. Like, I know what I'm supposed to do, I just have trouble actually doing it. And for me personally, the key secret, whatever you want to call it, like the reason that I can quote unquote get so much done, although I don't always feel like I get a ton of stuff done, is that like I have specifically, you know, a why as to why I want to get things done. And it's not just so I can check things off of a list. A lot of it goes back to like the whole positive mindset for me. You know, it's a spiritual mindset. It's specifically a Christian mindset, but I believe that there are biblical reasons that people are supposed to be productive. And when you do that, you're kind of functioning in the role that you were created to do. You know, I don't want to get too into personal beliefs, but I believe just having a strong why like that can help you do way more than you could ever do otherwise. And I think like the book that you were talking about by Viktor Frankl and the movie that we watched, like they had their why and it allowed them to overcome some pretty crazy circumstances. So yeah, I don't know if you want to chime in a little bit about that, maybe how you've found a why, maybe a, you know, personal example, if you got any.
Yeah, well, you know, going back to religion, I grew up kind of in a little bit more of a secular environment, but my girlfriend grew up in the South, and she really struggled with this. She never had a strong sense of a higher purpose that she found in the church. She actually went to about 10 different churches to see if she could find, and she just ended up back at the one that her parents went to. And we no longer attend Mass or anything like that. I didn't grow up attending. But we do have strong whys. But she really struggled with it because she could see that people who had that strong belief were happier. And they tended to be more successful in things. Not always, but there was a little bit of correlation there that, you know, if you have confidence and you're happy and you believe that there's a higher purpose and that you, things will work out for the best, you tend to take more action. If you take more action, you might fail a little bit more, but you're definitely going to succeed more. Mm-hmm. So it was a struggle for her growing up. She eventually kind of came around to the fact that, oh, it doesn't have to be just this structured religion. She can find her own why. I've got a list personally that I keep at the top of my goals list, you know, to know more than I did yesterday, to lessen the suffering of others, to explore, to discover, to teach. And my favorite one is actually to change the world and have a hell of a good time. So when I'm doing something, it is possible to look towards my why, and I'm writing an article and it's kind of difficult to get out. It's like, well, you know, I actually think this is going to help lessen the suffering of others. I'm actually reading it from an article that got out late because of I actually was really proud of myself. I thought I got it on time, but it was actually the publishing date that I turned it in versus the proofreading date. So that hence our meeting this morning. But it's the article's called "The One Lie Unproductive People Tell Themselves Until They Wake Up." I'm like, well, this really actually will help people, and I talk about how, you know, the one lie, I'm just, spoiler alert, I'm going to let you know, is that I'm not good enough. That's just something, or there's something wrong with me, more specifically, is what I said in the article. And I get this all the time. It happens to me, you know, some days where I don't feel like my brain is working and I'm just not functioning where I want to be. It's like, gosh dang, what's wrong with me? Or maybe I let something distract me for a little bit too long. It's like, geez, what's wrong with me? But you know, that's a lie. There's nothing wrong with you. And you know, as long as you can just keep knowing who you are, and serving others, you know, keep that focus outward, and that outward focus includes serving other people. So, you know, mm-hmm. it would go into your religious beliefs, or if you just get deep on your own personal why. One exercise that we've done and we've talked about before is the perfect day exercise.
Yep.
So deciding exactly what your perfect day is going to look like. That could be a pretty strong why. You know, if you want to wake up and be looking out the window into a beach and walk down the stairs and have a healthy breakfast with a loving family and then go outside and just whatever it is, just describing your perfect day in complete and vivid detail, that could be a strong why when you're working on something that's pretty difficult at the moment. It's like, no, I'm going for this. I know I can transform my life and turn it into something like this. I would agree. I can't even think of any other advice to tell people when they're struggling with procrastination. Yeah, there's some little hacks. You can use solar flaring, or you can use time boxing, or the Pomodoro technique, and breaking it down absolutely helps into smaller and smaller parts, so the whole doesn't seem more difficult than it needs to be. So there's a lot of techniques that you can use, but if you've used those techniques, then you just got to ask yourself why. And yep. If you don't have a good one, don't do it. You know, you got options. Don't do things you don't want to do. But you got to explore it.
Hey, everyone. Mike Schmitz here. Just wanted to say thank you for tuning in, and I hope you enjoyed the informal behind-the-scenes format of this episode. It's something new we're trying out, so please let us know if you want us to do more of these or if you prefer the standard teaching or interview format better. If you like the show, please head over to iTunes and leave us a rating and review. It will really help us out, and it enables other people like yourself to find the show easier. If you're interested in learning about how you can do more and be better, we also have a free productivity workshop specifically for podcast listeners. Just go to theproductivityshow.com/workshop to sign up. Thanks for joining us. We'll catch you next time.